Penguin Random House Audio presents Clean by Alia Trabuco Saran, with an English translation by Sophie Hughes. Read for you by Sylvana Kane.
It's a question of which will clean up the other. Albert Camus, The Fall, translated by Justin O'Brien. My name is Estela. Can you hear me? I said Estela Garcia. I don't know if you're recording this or taking notes or if there's anyone even over there. But if you can hear me, if you're there, then I want to propose a deal. I'm going to tell you a story. And when I get to the end, when I stop talking, you're going to let me out of here. Hello? Nothing? I'll take your silence as a yes. This story has several beginnings. I'd go as far as to say it's made up of beginnings. But tell me, what defines a beginning? Explain to me, for example, whether night comes before day or day before night. Whether we wake because we went to sleep or sleep because we woke up. Or better, to keep things simple, just tell me where a tree begins, in the seed or the fruit around it. Or perhaps it's in the branch that grew the flower that turned into the fruit. Or in the flower itself. Are you with me? Nothing is ever as simple as it seems. The same goes for causes. They're just as unclear as beginnings. The cause of my thirst or hunger, for example. The cause of my current confinement. One cause sets off another. One card brings down the next. The only given is the ending. Nothing's left standing. And the end of this story? Are you sure you want to know? Is this. The girl dies. Hello? No reaction at all? Let me say it again in case a fly buzzed in your ear. Or perhaps you were put off by a sharper, shriller thought than my voice. The girl dies. Did you hear this time? The girl dies and she's still dead, no matter where I begin. But death isn't so simple either. That much I'm sure we can agree on. Deaths are a little like shadows. They differ in length and breadth from person to person, creature to creature, tree to tree. No two shadows on the earth's surface are the same, and no two deaths are either. Every lamb, every spider, every chinkol dies in its own way. Take rabbits, for example. Stay with me. It's important. Have you ever held a rabbit in your hands? It's like cradling a grenade, a velvety time bomb. Tick-tock, 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 tick-tock. Rabbits are the only creatures on Earth that are regularly scared to death. If a rabbit picks up a fox's scent or senses a snake nearby, its heart starts racing and its pupils dilate. The adrenaline is like a hammer to the heart, and the rabbit dies before the predator can sink its fangs into its neck. It's fear that kills it, you see. Sheer anticipation. All within a fraction of a second, the rabbit realizes it's going to die, glimpses how and when. And this conviction, this foretelling of its imminent end, is its death sentence. It doesn't happen like that for house sparrows or cats, lizards or bees. And what to say about plants? The death of a willow or hydrangea, an ulmo or winter's bark. Or the end of a fig tree with its cement-like solid gray trunk. It would take a very powerful cause to kill a hardy fig, a deadly fungus slowly spreading through its branches until eventually, after decades, the tree's roots rot away, or a handsaw hacking it down and chopping its trunk into firewood. Every species, every living creature on the planet must find its own proper cause of death. A sufficient reason, one capable of crushing a life. And life, as you know, clings to some bodies. It fights back, thriving and dogged, and won't be easily pried away. For that, you need the appropriate tool. Soap for a stain, tweezers for a thorn. Can you hear me over there? Are you paying attention? A fish can't drown underwater, and a fish hook will barely scratch the roof of a whale's mouth. But you can't overdo death either. You can't die in excess. I'm getting to the point, don't worry. This is the edge of the story, and it's right to hang back at the edge before diving in. It's right that you understand how I came to be locked up, the events that led me here, and for you to glimpse, piece by piece, the girl's cause of death. I've killed before. It's true. I promise not to lie to you. I've killed flies and moths, chickens, worms, a fern, and a rosebush. And a long time ago, out of pity, I killed a wounded piglet. On that occasion, I did feel sad. But I killed it because it was dying. It was dying a slow and painful death, so I got there first. But those deaths don't interest you. They're not what you want to hear about. Don't worry. I'll get to the point, to the longed-for cause of death. A fistful of pills, a plane crash, a noose slung around a neck. Some people survive against all the odds. For them, the task of dying isn't so easy. Men who need to be mown down by a lorry or have a bullet pumped into their chest. Women who jump from the sixth floor because the fifth wouldn't cut it. For others, though, all it takes is a case of pneumonia, or a chill, or a fruit stone lodged in their throat. And for a very rare few, like the girl, just an idea will do. A lethal idea, born in a moment of weakness. I'll tell you about that idea, about when it came to her. Now stop what you're doing and listen to me. The advertisement read like this. Housemaid wanted, presentable, full-time. They gave a telephone number, which led to an address, and it was to that address that I set off, in a white blouse and this black skirt I'm wearing now. They met me at the door, the pair of them. I'm talking about the señor and señora, the house owners, the employers, the relatives of the deceased. You'll come up with your own name for them, I'm sure. She opened the door, pregnant, and as she went to shake my hand, she looked me up and down, taking in my hair, my clothes, my still white plimsolls. A thorough inspection, as if that would reveal to her some important detail about me. He, on the other hand, didn't so much as look at me. He was texting on his phone and, without even glancing up, pointed at the kitchen door. I can't reproduce their questions for me word for word, but I do remember one quite curious detail. He was clean-shaven, and there was a wisp of bright shaving foam just below his right sideburn. Hello? What is it? The maid can't use the word wisp? I thought I heard laughter, and not the friendly kind, on the other side of this wall. As I was saying, that mark on his skin unsettled me. It was like a tiny piece of skin had been torn from his face, but underneath, instead of flesh and blood, was something white, artificial. The señora noticed that I couldn't stop staring at him, and when at last she spotted the foam, she licked her thumb and wiped it away with her spit. You'll be wondering, how is any of this relevant? It isn't. That's the answer. Apart from that, I clearly recall his reaction, the way he removed his wife's hand, reproaching her for that display of intimacy in front of a perfect stranger. A few weeks later, I was making the master bed when the señor suddenly appeared out of the bathroom. I thought he'd already left for work, but there he was, standing stark naked in front of me. He didn't jump. He wasn't even flustered. Without batting an eyelid, he went to get a pair of underpants, returned to the bathroom and shut the door behind him. Perhaps you can explain what happened between our first meeting and that one. They needed someone to start as soon as possible. The señor said, ideally on Monday. The señora, ideally today. Stuck to the fridge was a piece of paper listing all the jobs I'd be expected to carry out. This way they wouldn't have to ask their eventual maid outright if she could read. If she was capable of writing the shopping list or taking down phone messages. I went over, read the list, took the piece of paper and put it in my pocket. Neat, assertive, a sufficiently well-educated maid. I can start on Monday, I said. They accepted right away. without even...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?